Good afternoon. I'd like to bring the House Committee on Business and Labor to order. We have a few work sessions we'd like to dispense with to start before we get into our discussion on transportation network companies. So with that, I'd like to open a work session, House Bill 2090.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this is a measure that came to you from Representative Williamson and Representative Huffman. You heard it on March 27th. It's a measure that establishes as an unlawful trade practice the use, disclosure, or disposal of information that's requested, required, or received from a consumer if it's not done in the manner or for the purpose stated to the consumer on the website or the consumer agreement. The Dash 1 amendment adds that it's an unlawful trade practice to also collect, maintain, or delete information that's not done in the manner that it said it would be done in. And then there is no revenue impact and a minimal expenditure impact.
Representative Bynum.
Chair Holvey, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2090.
Representative Bynum moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2090. Discussion on the amendment. Is there any objection to the adoption of the Dash 1 amendment? Seeing none, they're adopted.
Chair Holvey, I move House Bill 2090 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bynum moves House Bill 2090 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none, Kayla, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yep.
Representative Fahey?
Aye.
Representative Hack?
Aye.
Representative Hurd?
Aye.
Representative Penner?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barreto?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bynum?
Aye.
Chair Holvey?
Aye. House Bill 2090, having received the votes, is passed. We'll have Representative Williamson carry that bill on the floor. That'll close the work session on House Bill 2090 and open a work session on House Bill 3101.
Okay, Mr. Chair and committee members, this measure was brought to you by Representative Gomberg. You heard it on March 15th. It prohibits a hotel or innkeeper from charging a facility fee that's in addition to the rental price of the room. After the committee heard the bill, the committee requested an amendment that allows the facility fee to be charged as long as the hotel, the innkeeper, or a travel arrangement company first discloses to the consumer the amount of the facility fee when the consumer reserves or rents the room. There's no expenditure impact and there's no revenue impact.
Representative Bynum.
Chair Holvey, I move to adopt the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 3101.
Representative Bynum moves to adopt the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 3101. Is there a discussion? Representative Fahey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did we ever get an answer to the question about whether at the federal level this is already required? Because the summary, SMS summary, says the Federal Trade Commission sent letters to major hotel operators reminding them that they should be including any mandatory resort fees in the reservation rate included consumers. So I wasn't sure if that was a federal statute already or...
We have an answer.
Mr. Chair, committee members, there's a requirement in the Federal Trade Commission Act. It's listed in the staff measure summary, Section 5, that would be a violation to misrepresent prices. So it's not specific to hotels. It's more of a general consumer protection.
Thank you. Other discussion? You know, Barreto.
Yeah, on this amendment, I was just wondering how difficult this is for other companies that that make these reservations to have all of the information, you know, because they make reservations on a lot of different for a lot of different companies, a lot of different motels. So anyway, I'm just concerned with how difficult that would be to follow through with what the amendment does.
Well, I certainly have not heard of anyone coming forward with difficulties. I know that Representative
either.
Brock Smith also and Representative McEwen both came forward with some issues that were dealt with, from what I understand, from Representative Gomberg, who supports the Dash 4 amendment, and it at least from my understanding, dealt with those issues from the others. So, further discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to adopting the Dash 4 amendment? Seeing none, they're adopted. Representative Bynum?
Chair Holvey, I move House Bill 3101 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Bynum moves House Bill 3101 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, Kayla, could we have a roll call, please?
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative Fahey?
Aye.
Representative Hack?
Aye.
Representative Hurd?
Aye.
Representative Penimer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barreto?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bynum?
Aye.
Chair Holvey?
Aye. House Bill 3101, having received the required votes, is passed, and we'll have Representative Gomberg carry that bill. With that, I'll close work session on House Bill 3101 and open a work session on House Bill 3184.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is a measure that Representative Alonzo Leon brought to the committee. It prohibits a person holding the consumer finance loan license or a payday loan or title loan license from making a loan to a resident who does not hold the certificate showing that they've completed a loan counseling program. The Dash 1 amendment replaces the measure, and instead it requires the Department of Consumer and Business Services to develop and implement a payday and title loan tracking system that would include a loan counseling component for consumers, and it prohibits a payday loan or title loan licensee from charging the consumer any amount to recover the costs that the licensee pays to access the tracking system. There is a minimal expenditure impact, and there's no revenue impact on the Dash 1 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Bynum.
Chair Holvey, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3184.
Representative Bynum moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3184. Discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to adopting the Dash 1 amendments? Seeing none, they're so adopted. Representative Bynum?
Chair Holvey, I move House Bill 3184 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bynum moves House Bill 3184 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, in the description here, it says that it requires CBS. And in the amendment, it says it may develop and then it also may adopt. And so does this take away the requiring part and just allows them to be flexible?
That's my understanding.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Barreto, the amendment replaces the original measure, and so there's no longer any requirement that the consumer take the counseling program, and instead it's having them add a component to their online tracking system that DCBS would develop or would have a vendor develop that would include the counseling program.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Other discussion, Representative Hack.
Thank you, Chair. I don't remember or recall, was there a fiscal or an FTE that would be affiliated with this through DCBS?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hack came back as a minimal expenditure impact. So there's really no additional information on the fiscal statement. It just says there's a minimal impact that the agency feels they can absorb in their budget.
Further discussion?
Yeah, a minimal is less than $25,000, is that correct?
Representative Barreto? The question is...
Is it less than $25,000 if there's a minimal?
That, I don't know that we control what defining that. It's done in legislative fiscal office. I'm not sure how consistent their policies to an actual number. Do not know. Any other discussion? Seeing none, Kayla, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative
Fahey? Aye.
Representative Hack?
Aye.
Representative Hurd?
Aye.
Representative Penner?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barreto?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bynum?
Aye.
Chair Holvey?
Aye. House Bill 3184, having received the votes, is passed, and we'll have Representative Alonzo Leon carry that. With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 3184 and open a public hearing on several bills at the same time, so people will have to speak specifically to which bill they want to talk to. They're all related to the transportation network bills. So I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3043, open a public hearing on House Bill 3045, open a public hearing on House Bill 3093, and open a public hearing on House Bill 3157, and open a public hearing in addition to House Bill 3246. So, Jan, would you like to give us a brief summary of the bill?
I guess it'll be recorded.
So why don't you give us a brief discussion of 3246? Seems to be the most popular bill, judging by the sign-up sheet.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 3246 provides the exclusive regulation of transportation network companies. That the state would have exclusive regulation requires a TNC, that's a transportation network company, to register and pay an annual fee to DCBS, establishes requirements regarding the records retention, insurance disclosure to the driver, and information disclosure to the riders, requires TNC to conduct background checks and review the driving history of prospective drivers, requires TNC to adopt, display, and require drivers to follow written policies regarding their compensation, discrimination, and drug and alcohol use, requires the TNC to adopt and display policy regarding a complaint process, and it provides that TNC driver is an independent contractor if the driver signs such an agreement, establishes minimum level of insurance coverage for different situations, allows the insurer to deny or exclude coverage for loss of injury occurring while the driver is connected to the TNC's digital network. And finally, it authorizes the department to inspect certain records of the TNC and impose civil penalties up to $100 per violation.
Thank you. And we will have to limit people to 3 minutes apiece. There's much more people signed up than I have time for testimony. So we'll try to get through as many as we can, and that's always subject to how long our questions take. But I think I will go ahead and call up Representative Stark first.
Darren Campbell join?
I guess so. Just go ahead and introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair Holvey, members of the committee. My name is Dwayne Stark, State Representative, House District 4 in Southern Oregon, and I'm here specifically about House Bill 3043. You know, when we go home and you're sitting around in the evening and you check Facebook, you never know what you're going to get. Sometimes it's something fun, sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's horrifying. And about 6 months ago, I got on Facebook, and I had a personal message from a childhood schoolmate sitting with me right now, Crystal Perkins. And the message included the pictures that were passed out to you a little while ago. And it told the story that she'll tell you in just a moment about the abuse that she endured as she was taking a cab ride on the back streets late one night. And I immediately went into a bit of both a sorrow and a panic mode, trying to figure out how in the world can I help Crystal, and how in the world can we keep this from happening to other people? And so that dove into several other conversations, and there were a number of things that we talked about doing, and a number of things with her case that, I mean, if you could imagine something going wrong as far as receiving justice in a case, it pretty much went wrong in her case. There was issues with everything from the rape kit itself to what county it did or did not occur in, all kinds of issues that had to be resolved. And when all said and done, justice was not done. And we're here today trying to make sure that other women, other men, children, anybody would not have to endure abuse when they hire a ride home. And that there's accountability to that, and that there's a protection that we as a state have tried to put in ahead of time. And so one of the bills that came out of these conversations is the idea that given the upcoming conversation you guys are about to have, I have no idea what I'm supposed to call the overall industry, but the idea that if you are paying for a ride home, if you hire someone, whether it's a cabbie, Uber, Lyft, I don't really care which category it is, if you are paying someone for a ride home, then you should be able to have some faith that someone has vetted that person and their safety, whether or not they are a safe person. And so we're requesting that those individuals that give those paid rides home undergo a background check. It seems fairly simple and straightforward to me that we might be able to weed out some of the bad actors out there and protect more people because of that. Because people, when they hire a cab ride, they're putting themselves in a very vulnerable position. And so that's what this bill is about. A couple things that have come up that I just want to comment on real quick. As you know, as we were looking at a more recent draft to this, we have come up with more amendments that Mr. Campbell will discuss in just a moment, because one of the number one groups that we really wanted to make sure were identified in this, accidentally we did not include in the original language, which is the sole proprietors, the individual cab drivers and so forth. And the other is, people have come and talked to me about the idea of fingerprinting and saying that we shouldn't have fingerprinting in the background check. My comment on that, as just a broad stroke with that, is we use the same background check for all sorts of things here in the state. Our children, we trust the safety of our children to the background checks that our teachers undergo. We trust the safety of those who carry firearms to the background checks that they undergo. And so for this purpose, I think we should use the same background check that our state uses for everything else. And if at some point our state decides that we want to change course on that, well, then by all means, we can change course across the board. But right now, for me, it was not about whether we do or don't have fingerprints. It's about making sure people can have a little more faith in the right they're receiving. On that note, I want to allow Crystal to share her story. It's heartbreaking, and she has tried to rehearse to maintain your timeline.
Chairholder, members, community, my name is Crystal Perkins, and I'm here today to share my story with you. I would like to start off by saying that being here today is an honor. When my journey began almost 2 years ago, I had only hoped and prayed that I would be fortunate enough to be here before y'all today. What started out as a devastation to my life has now become a rewarding moment that may change the future for women. At the time of my assault, I was attending college at Western Oregon University. I was an undergraduate student and had only 1 year of college left to complete my bachelor's degree in psychology. Previously, I had earned my degree in criminal justice as well as completing my training at the academy. I graduated third in my class in May of 2013. Upon graduation from Western in June of 2015, I was planning my career in law enforcement with a local agency as a patrol officer, and eventually one day as a detective in homicide division. However, on June 1st of 2014, my life, it was changed forever. Excuse me. At the time, I thought it had changed for the worst. I honestly didn't think that I would ever survive the first few days, let alone the first few years. I was on a break from school, and I was visiting my parents and my fiancé in Southern Oregon. His name is Daniel. Daniel and I had a day planned together on that Sunday. Spent the day outside. The time came when it was time to go home, and he was going in the opposite direction, so I decided to call a cab back out to my parents' house and get a ride that way. You know, when people call cabs for a ride, they put their life and their trust into that cab. To that cab driver to get them home safe. I unfortunately was not so lucky to have a driver who was looking out for the best interest in my well-being. And due to my cab driver's negligence and disregard to display decent human behavior, he managed to alter my life's path, a path I had spent so much hard work and education and time to achieve. I was the victim of a traumatic life experience that no woman should ever have to endure. I was brutally beaten and raped. I sustained multiple physical injuries, including a pretty severe head trauma that lasted for over a year. However, my physical injuries were nothing in comparison to my emotional and mental anguish. This man took so much from me that night that I honestly did not know if I would ever get any of it back. He took my ability to trust anyone. The once happy, positive, intelligent, and genuinely kindred spirit that stepped into the cab that night left that same cab a few hours later, a very broken woman. Just a few hours had passed, and I chose to do the right thing. I went to the hospital, and I wanted to press charges. In spite of being completely terrified and utterly humiliated, I called my best friend to pick me up and take me to the hospital. Almost a year had passed, and I was about to graduate school, and honestly had no idea how I made it through that year. But I just kept telling myself that I can't let this man take my education from me, too. When I received a phone call from the detective in charge of my case, he informed me that there wasn't enough sufficient evidence, forensic evidence, to prosecute my attacker. I was completely devastated. He said if we had only been able to get the rape kit from the hospital that was so conveniently misplaced or incorrectly done, then there may have been a better chance. The man that did this to me was the owner-operator of his own taxi cab company. He ran it out of his home. He had one car. There's not enough laws here in Oregon for these type of companies, and there's no consequences when they break these laws, but any laws. So here I sit in front of you all today asking you to help me help future citizens of a state I love so much. I cannot do anything about the injustice I received. But I'm asking for your help in making a difference in future potential victims. If it can save just one person from having to endure the pain and turmoil I have been through, then it makes it worth it to me. I do not hold grudges or want revenge. All I want is the opportunity to get my story out there and to see a law go into effect that can only do Oregon, that can only do good in our state of Oregon. And thank you very much for taking the time to have me here today and listen to me.
Thank you so much for having the courage and the fortitude to come here and share your story. It's definitely impactful, and wish nothing like that should ever happen to anybody. Go ahead.
Representative Holvey, members of the committee, my name is Darren Campbell. I'm here today representing Radio Cab out of Portland, Oregon. Not only am I their lobbyist, but I'm also an owner-operator and drive a cab myself for the last 7 years. Originally, when I requested this piece of legislation, it was in an attempt to make our industry better. We've seen outside of the regulated cities of Portland, Medford, Salem, Eugene, Portland, exactly what Crystal is just talking about, a great deal of people who buy a car, put their name on the side, and all of a sudden they're a taxi driver. There's no real state regulation to make sure that these people are doing right by the people that they're driving. And they're sometimes children, teenagers, grandmothers, the medically susceptible to whatever. And most of the time, they're impossible to track down once that person leaves their vehicle. So we've come up with this bill not long after we requested it. Representative Stark's office got in touch, he got in touch with us. And so we decided to work together on this thing. And also, for the record, I put in testimony on all five bills we're hearing today, all in one. So I'm probably going to jump around a little bit. I did want to talk towards the amendments that we've requested, because we did realize after the bill came out, it did not cover a sole proprietor or owner of a for-hire driver vehicle. So that person who owns their own car doesn't fall under this bill. That would be the first amendment we'd like to make, and I think we can put sole proprietor on line 13 under the description of participating driver. The second amendment, we want to make sure that we add in street hails as a way to get a ride with a taxi cab, just because it's one way to do it. So we don't want to leave that one out. Third, we wanted to instruct ODOT to hold record of all drivers who are in compliance with this law. I know that ODOT's here, and we can speak to them further. I've asked Representative Stark to set up a meeting with ODOT so we can kind of figure out some of the guidelines of how we can do this in the near future. Fourth, have ODOT issue a certificate of compliance to those who pass and a letter to those who don't with an explanation as to why the applicant failed to pass. This is important because if law enforcement pulls somebody over, or if a regulatory division pulls somebody over or wants to see the paperwork, they have proof right there that they passed the background check and that they're following the in compliance with this law. Now, this is all fine and good, but we didn't have any type of punishment or punitive factor of this bill. So the Fifth Amendment we're asking for is for a Class C misdemeanor crime to all those who fail to comply with this measure. I've asked Sean Brennan from Legislative Council to draft these amendments, and under that one, we wanted to give a grace period that if somebody gets a misdemeanor crime, they have a chance, yet to be determined length of time, to comply with this measure, and that misdemeanor will go away. However, it's important that we have the punitive part in here to keep these people who aren't able to pass the background check off the streets and out of the opportunity of covering public service, public transportation.
Thank you. Questions of this panel? Darren, does this bill cover have the same requirements for taxi cab companies, or are they already required to?
It's spotty. So, speaking for Radio Cab, we have a great number of school drivers that under the Portland Public Schools have to go through a fingerprint background check every 2 years. That's not really true for anybody else, unless you have a specific contract like that.
Under this bill, though, would
under
it
this bill, it will be a blanket coverage over all taxi cab industry, TNC industry, Uber, Lyft, all of them.
That was my question.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Certainly.
Again, thank you so much for your testimony. I appreciate it. And best of luck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Holby, real quick, I've got, since the first four bills are ones I requested, I don't know if you want, I brought a few people to speak specifically to certain bills.
Let me get back to you. Let me get back to you.
Okay, certainly.
Hopefully. So up next, I'd like to have Bryce Bennett, Laura Bassetto, and Janelle Lawrence. Good afternoon. If you just introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Bryce Bennett, and I'm the general manager for Uber here in Oregon.
Good afternoon. I'm Laura Bassetto. I'm here for Lyft.
Janelle Lawrence, Oregon Impact.
So whichever wants to go first.
Sure. Well, thank you, Chair Holby, members of the committee, for the opportunity to address you today. There are quite a few bills all being heard at once here, and I'll attempt to synthesize our thoughts as clearly as possible here. First, we'd like to speak to you in support of House Bill 3246 and in opposition to House Bills 3043, 3045, and 3096. Additionally, we have worked with stakeholders on proposed amendments to House Bill 3246 that would remove the independent contractor language, grandfather Portland's regulations in, and create a sustainability fee for the state. House Bill 3246 would make Oregon the 39th state to create a regulatory framework for TNCs, resulting in increased mobility for rural and urban communities, as well as thousands of new flexible earning opportunities. Several more states are expected to adopt statewide TNC laws very similar to 3246 this year. I urge you to oppose the unnecessary policies mentioned in House Bills 3043, 3045, and 3093, which have been proposed by the largest taxi company in Portland. We have submitted a letter that former Obama administration U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder sent to the California POC when they considered similar proposals just this last year. Bills similar to these have been proposed and rejected in state after state because they harm residents who want to benefit from TNC services and serve to disenfranchise certain groups of TNC drivers, particularly drivers of color. I want to speak to you about two important safety areas that this legislation standardizes: background checks and insurance. 3246 would require all drivers on a TNC platform to undergo a three-step screening process through a nationally accredited third-party background check, including a three-year motor vehicle record check, a seven-year Social Security trace, and multiple national database checks. Second, it would align insurance requirements across the state, ensuring Uber provides primary commercial insurance to drivers from app on to app off. This includes $1 million of liability coverage anytime a driver is engaged on a trip with a rider. Finally, in addition to all these measures, Uber continues to focus on improving safety here in Oregon. We work with over 6,000 local Oregonians just in the Portland metro area. We have connected over 325,000 local riders to affordable, reliable transportation. That's over 10% of the metro area population. We'll continue to focus on safety, providing a real-time rider-driver feedback loop, 24/7 incident response teams, and driver facial identification checks to ensure the person in the car is the person who's on the app. Unlike private-for-hire transportations of the past, riders always know who their driver is, the make and the model of the vehicle, and the license plate number before they even get in the car. Additionally, every trip is tracked by GPS. We're committed to the state of Oregon, and we hope you support House Bill 3246. Again, it opposed 3043, 3045, and 3093. And we look forward to continuing the conversation and answering any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Holby and members of the House and Business Labor Committee. Again, my name is Laura Bisesto, and I'm a government relations manager at Lyft. I'm here to express Lyft's strong support for House Bill 3246, which creates a statewide regulatory structure for ride sharing that will allow services like Lyft to expand throughout Oregon. I'd also like to express our opposition to House Bills 3043, 3045, and 3093, which would provide a patchwork of ride-sharing standards that will be detrimental to drivers and passengers alike and are inconsistent with regulations that are already in place in Portland and throughout the United States. Lyft is an online ride-sharing application that connects people with efficient, friendly, and safe drivers in their communities. At a basic level, we make it easier for people to offer neighbors a ride and help people carpool more efficiently. The service enhances transportation options for Oregonians and tourists alike, while also acting as a complement to existing transportation infrastructure investments. In addition to providing safe rides home for those who want to responsibly enjoy a night out on the town, we've partnered with different transportation agencies and municipalities throughout the U.S. to make it easier for people to use public transit by serving as a first mile and last mile connector, or by being someone's guaranteed ride home from work, thereby incentivizing carpooling and use of public transit in at least one direction. We also provide thousands of safe rides home for students and workers whose days end at times when transit is shut down for the day. We also provide rides for seniors who no longer should be on the road. And my colleague actually submitted testimony about our recent innovations in senior mobility. And I don't know if she'll have time to testify today, but I did want to note that her testimony submitted. We have a product now so that people at senior centers can use a computer if they're at the front desk to request a ride for someone who's living there, making it easy for people there to get around. But more than anything, Lyft is about giving people choices. As of this year, 38 states across the country have passed comprehensive legislation, just like HB, House Bill 3246, that regulates Lyft in a safe and comprehensive manner. We hope Oregon can join these efforts that allow consumers to have the ability of choosing Lyft. We think it's valuable that no matter where you are in the U.S., no matter where you are in Oregon, everyone can get a safe ride home and that people can have the freedom they want to choose a certain ride service. People like the service because they know what they're going to get. They use it millions of times a day across the nation because it's consistent and safe. In fact, at Lyft, safety is our top priority. We absolutely support background checks, and our goal is to make every ride safe, comfortable, and reliable. Our riders use Lyft because they feel safe with our drivers, which is a product of this commitment. Before any driver can accept a ride on the Lyft platform, they must undergo a mandatory local, state, and national background check conducted by Sterling Talent Solutions, which is the leading provider of background checks for 25% of the Fortune 100 companies. Sterling's an accredited by the National Association of Professional Background Screeners, which requires a rigorous audit of its procedures and policies. That kind of background check is set forth in House Bill 3246. But what really distinguishes Lyft is how we utilize technology to provide consumers with transparency and accountability features in addition to these background checks. Every Lyft ride is GPS tracked, and all rides are cashless. Passengers receive their driver's picture and the license plate before they enter the vehicle, and both the driver and passenger rate each other after the ride, allowing for instant removal from a platform if any issues arise during the ride. Riders in the car can also send their real-time estimated time of arrival to family and friends via text message. In short, no ride is ever anonymous. This process has been reviewed and approved by the City of Portland and in over 40 states. Combining background checks with real-time feedback has never been done before, and it's the reason people choose to take millions of Lyft rides across the nation. We're proud that Lyft is more than just a ride-sharing application. It is also a unique and flexible economic opportunity that turns anyone with a car into an entrepreneur who can set a schedule according to their terms. The Lyft driver community is made up of retirees, single parents, students, folks trying to get around, and families simply trying to make ends meet. Onerous regulations as set forth in House Bills 3043, 3045, 3093 can become a barrier to entry for drivers who drive nearly 15 hours per week, just like 80% of our drivers. Along with these community and economic benefits, we believe that Lyft is contributing to a more sustainable Oregon, and we are showing our commitment to this with the proposed first-of-its-kind sustainability fee amendment, where a fee for each ride would go towards sustainable transportation infrastructure. Indeed, over 80% of the cars on the road have only one occupant. By getting a Lyft instead of driving their cars, Oregonians are not just saving time. They're reducing congestion, freeing up parking, making more efficient use of existing roads, and with this bill will support sustainable transportation infrastructure. Statewide legislation is a path forward, providing consumers, drivers, and visitors a consistent experience with Lyft. It's also imperative to have a statewide regulatory structure so drivers who pick up at Portland Airport and drop off in Corvallis or Eugene don't return to Portland without a passenger in the car.
And could you conclude your testimony? We have a lot of people left to testify.
Sorry. Thank you for allowing me to discuss Lyft. And I ask for your aye vote in support of HB 3246. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Hovley and members of the committee, my name is Janelle Lawrence, and I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Impact. We're Oregon's largest organization dedicated to preventing drinking and distracted driving. Oregon Impact was once known as the Clackamas County Victims Impact Panel. We became a nonprofit in 1998 to expand efforts to increase safe driving by reducing driving under the influence and from a primary intervention focus to an emphasis on prevention. Starting in 1987, following approval by the Oregon Legislature of a law allowing judges to require individuals convicted of driving while intoxicated to attend a presentation by victims of crashes caused by offenders as a condition of probation or diversion. Since then, it has become our mission to prevent drivers from ever getting to a panel before being made more aware of the risks of drinking under the influence and how it affects your family, your children, and the community. I'm here to express my strong support for House Bill 3246, and I strongly urge the committee to support the bill and send it to the floor for a vote. Simply put, I know from my 7 years' experience at Oregon Impact that expanding ride-sharing services like Uber and Lyft to all of Oregon will benefit all of us who use our state roadways every day. There are many reasons for this, which I'm sure you know: less congestion, cleaner air, improvement to the local economy. But from my perspective, Uber and Lyft offer an even greater service. There are designated drivers. They help and make it easier for more people to make the responsible choice to not drink and drive. And for those who have made the unfortunate choice to drink and get behind the wheel, ride-sharing services is something that we use every day to assist Oregonians that are on diversion to get their life back. The ability to hail an Uber so easy allows those on diversion to continue to work, to make their court appearances, and continue to participate in the lives of their family while their license is under suspension. We've seen a significant decrease in the number of people in diversion who chose to drive illegally, thanks to Uber. When we provide education on impaired and distracted driving, Uber's part of our toolkit. We know that once you consume alcohol, after that first drink, your brain simply can't make a clear decision on your ability to drive. And Uber and Lyft help people plan from the beginning when they leave their home to when they decide if they're going to come home themselves or another way. This simply wasn't the case when taxis were the only option in Portland. The limited number of taxis and the long waits didn't make it a viable solution and led to many people taking the unfortunate risk to drink and drive. I see the results every day of making one poor decision to drink and get behind the wheel. I urge you to support House Bill 3246 and reject any proposal intended to damage the ride-sharing industry, to expand ride-sharing services to our entire state so that all Oregonians have a better chance to arrive home safely and keep their lives on track. There's no doubt in my mind that House Bill 3246 is going to save lives.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony. Quick questions for this panel, Representative Doherty.
Okay, first of all, actually, one's a comment and a question. First of all, how can you guys absolutely say you are against having criminal background checks with fingerprints for somebody who's going to get in a car with somebody? I honestly need to know that, because I'm appalled that you would even not agree that all of your people should have fingerprint background checks. And along that is that the letter that you sent from Attorney General Holter, I don't know if you know, it was based on a Fox News story, and that there's been question about the validity of the study. So that's just a side comment. But you guys really don't want your people to have criminal background checks?
Chair Holby, Representative Doherty, I don't think that's the case at all. I think we're very supportive of stringent background checks, and we carry those out in every state that we operate in the United States. Like I mentioned, we use a 7-year Social Security trace program, which goes to the court records themselves and is based off conviction rather than a database fingerprint system, which can not include conviction data. It can just include any time someone was fingerprinted. Additionally, we have a 3-year motor vehicle record check, and we've worked closely with Peabot and Portland on a lot of these policies while we've been in Oregon. Additionally, we do national offender, sex offender and terrorist watch lists. We are very much in favor of strong background checks.
So you're supportive of that bill that's on here?
We don't believe that fingerprinting is the best method to achieve those results.
No, everybody else does, so.
Further questions, Representative Heck.
Thank you, Chair. So question I had was, somebody had mentioned that you driver's licenses and pictures are received before the ride. How does that work?
Thank you for your question. So before a ride begins, so when a driver signs on to the app, they're considered to be a customer as well. And when they sign on, they're matched with a passenger who's in a nearby location. And when that match happens, the passenger on their app, a picture of the driver appears on the app, as well as a picture of the driver's car and the license plate number for the driver. So while the passenger's waiting, the passenger knows who the driver is, what their name is, what they look like, and what their car is and what their license plate is. So the ride isn't anonymous. And it's the same for the driver knowing about the passenger. The driver may have a picture of the passenger if the passenger entered in their photo, so they know who they're picking up as well.
Can I have a quick follow-up?
Follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. Is that for Uber and for Lyft, and then cabs? Do our cabs offer the same? I don't ride them, so I don't know.
Chair Holby, Representative Hack.
Not very often, anyway.
It is the same system for Uber and Lyft. Cabs, I would defer to the cab companies if they developed that technology.
Representative Kinnamer, question?
Yeah, I just wanted to hear from the Lyft representative about a little bit more about your view regarding fingerprints.
Yes, thank you for your question. I appreciate it. So Lyft is very supportive of background checks. The issue with fingerprinting compared to the commercial background check process is the fingerprinting database is only as good as the people who are uploading information to that database. My understanding is that when someone is arrested, they may be fingerprinted right away, but there's no necessarily follow-up, and it's really jurisdiction by jurisdiction. So there's not necessarily conviction results, acquittal results on the database. The fingerprinting database, and I think this is what former Attorney General Holder is referring to, is really supposed to be a law enforcement lead generator. So I used to be a former prosecutor. So when I would read an FBI rap sheet, there'd typically be a number of arrests, but I would have no idea what would happen with a case. So I would have to call up the different jurisdictions and say, what happened here? What happened here? Please send over the police report. On the contrary, with the commercial background check process, it's already put in place that we run the checks at a number of different databases at the local, federal, and state levels. And then there's people on the ground that go to the courthouse to find out what happened with each case. And it's a very efficient, quick manner that it happens in a number of days. So it's just a little bit of a different way of doing things. You know, arguably, it's for employment purposes.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony today. Up next, I'd like Representative McLean. Are you still in the audience? Tom Chamberlain and Rebecca Smith. Good afternoon, and welcome. Identify yourself for the record, and note that we're trying to keep a three-minute speech.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee. Transportation network companies or ride shares are a growing industry, and we need to know a lot more about that industry and how it
impacts. If you could identify yourself real quick.
Susan McLean, House District 29. I was just trying to hurry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we need to know a lot more about the industry and its impacts on workers and public safety and consumers before we can truly consider a regulatory framework in the state of Oregon. There are basic concerns that we must address in any budding industry and any transitional time. And this transitional period in our economy is only going to continue. We shouldn't rush this type of conversation about critically important topics like this, and we need to get it right. One of the representatives from one of the transportation network companies that you just saw said that there were 39 states that had actually had a statewide type of regulatory factor. I ask you to look at those 39 states because they're not all the same. And you will see that some of those states, along with many, many cities in the United States, have all decided to talk about the framework in different ways with different standards. And they tried to have a national standard that was not able to be accepted in many ways because there were different items that different cities and different locales felt were more important. So look at those 39 states, look at what they're talking about, and don't just assume because they've all passed something that they're the same. Also, I want to talk specifically about House Bill 3246, and there are some key areas that we need to look at more. First of all, I think that sometimes we have to be careful about statewide preemption. It stifles progress for our localities in many ways. Let's talk about workers' rights. Let's talk about public safety, which you heard about today. Let's talk about transparency at the local level. We need to look at it very carefully before we go to a statewide fix on anything. And in this new industry, these new TNCs, we need to think about it here as well. The same strategy of preempting local regulations is happening actually in the state of Washington. And there are many drivers and there are many articles out there that you can read, and I have them in my office if you'd like, that talk about those TNC drivers and how they're not happy with some of the ways they're being treated in different states because of these preemptions. Let's look at the comment that one of the folks said on the previous panel, and that was that they were going to change and they were going to take out the wording about independent contractor or a worker. Now, I haven't exactly been able to study that particular amendment, but we need to study it more because I need to know what the definition is that they have for independent contractor or for an actual worker for their company. This is a dangerous precedent if we don't look at it more carefully. There is absolutely no reasonable argument for regulating just this one component of our transportation systems at the statewide level. If we're going to look at transportation pieces, then we need to look at all of those pieces, the limousines, the buses, the trains, and all of the other items that are locally controlled. And before we're going to preempt anything, let's see why our TNCs so different from the rest of our transportation system. There are significant public safety concerns with this industry. You've already heard about adequate background checks and who likes fingerprints and who doesn't, who thinks that there's one actual register that's more important than the other. But again, we need to look at that carefully to make sure that we have the most pristine background checks and the most thorough background checks that we can get. TNCs face different safety standards in different localities, even in the state of Oregon. For example, the Port of Portland and the City of Portland. I think there are folks here from both, and I'd like you to look at the differences. I prefer the Port of Portland. You might prefer Portland. But if we're going to do a state fix, you need to look at some of the other standards that we already have in the state. We are all seeing, I'm getting to the end, we are all seeing that all kinds of news is out there about TNCs and some of the challenges they're having in this transition time getting to a regulatory structure. We need to be careful and we need to be thorough. You will hear today from organizational leaders, advocates, and drivers. And I just ask you to be engaged. I'm really, really willing to be engaged and talk about worker and consumer rights in this gig economy over the next few years. But I want to caution the committee into rushing headlong into a regulatory conversation over these four or five bills. So thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Holvey's, members of the committee, my name's Tom Chamberlain, and I'm here today representing over 300,000 working men and women of the Oregon AFL-CIO. The Oregon AFL-CIO has a long history of advocating for workers who are in unions and out of unions during this legislative process. With this key role in mind, our organization has significant concerns about the gig economy and its impact on working Oregonians. Since we're here today due to a number of TNC bills, I'll first comment and echo some of the concerns that you've already heard. As you've heard from Representative McLean, there are many questions and concerns that are raised through the TNC's industry, House Bill 3246. Whether it's declaring that TNC drivers are independent contractors, prohibiting local solutions that fits the needs of local communities by preempting local jurisdictions, unnecessarily regulating just the one component of the transportation system at the state level, when TNCs are part of a hyper-localized system and every component of these systems is regulated at the local level. Having a statewide standard about background checks is inadequate and far less than what other transportation providers expect of their drivers. No matter how you look at it, no matter what pieces you omit, this is a problematic approach to how our state chooses to regulate the entire industry. Now, you've heard some of the comments from the proponents of House Bill 3246, willingness to remove the independent contractors and others. This tells me that we're trying to negotiate through amendment to a very complex problem that we should take some time to really investigate. As a voice for all workers, and especially in light of a changing economy that puts more and more of the burden on workers and less of the burden on employers, we're keenly aware of the importance of this conversation. We're very proud to bring before you today a number of different voices from TNC drivers, others in the gig economy. You'll hear from a national legal expert on a variety of concerns and ways that our state could consider learning more about the industry. You'll also hear some personal stories from the TNC drivers. And you'll hear from an employment attorney for additional context on some of the questions we should be asking as a state before making a decision about regulating matters with the TNCs on a gig economy. The gig economy is becoming more and more an important component of the American economy. Before the legislature passes a bill that singles out the TNCs, Oregon must have a deeper, more comprehensive conversation about the entire gig economy. And we should do that over the next 2 years. We shouldn't rush. We need to do what's right for workers, we need to do what's right for consumers, and we need to do what's right for Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Holvey and members of the committee. Thank you for having me here. I'm Rebecca Smith, and I work for the National Employment Law Project, and we're an advocacy organization based in New York and Washington. I'm based in Seattle. And I'm here to speak in opposition to House Bill 3246 and to suggest some alternatives for you. I have five slides. I'm going to do those in 3 minutes. Let's see if that works. So I think we first need to think about the gig economy in context. It's very true that independent contractors as a class of workers are growing and growing quickly. But the on-demand economy, of which Uber is really the largest player, is still just a very small part of the economy. And it's that part that is striped in black and yellow on your screen. And what that says to me is that we can get things really right for a lot of people when we regulate the gig economy, or we can get things really wrong for a lot of people as well. One way to think about the gig economy, and I'm just going to do this quickly, which I stole from Dr. David Weil, who literally wrote the book on the fissured workplace and was the wage and hour administrator under President Obama, is that there's really two different things going on here. One are virtual marketplaces that are really like, for those of us who are old enough to remember, the Yellow Pages, where really independent contractors advertise their services, set their prices, and connect with consumers. The second are companies that are really selling a branded experience. And so they have a strong interest in protecting their brand. They set the prices of work for workers. They deactivate or fire workers who don't meet those standards. And they subject these workers to very extensive electronic monitoring. They sound an awful lot like employers. So should TNC workers be considered employees? Why should they be entitled to minimum wage? Well, because some of them report sub-minimum wages. Why should they get workers' compensation? Because taxi and chauffeur, that class of workers, suffers 5 times the fatalities of other workers. Why should they get, why should they get unemployment insurance? Because these jobs and wages are volatile, and because people do lose their jobs, they're deactivated. And further, they should have anti-discrimination protections, including fair chance hiring protections. Oregon has a ban the box statute that could apply to workers who are employees. You hear a lot about that these workers aren't employees because they have flexibility on their job, and that's debatable, and I won't go into the reasons, but there's nothing in employment law that says you can't have both flexibility and employment status. In fact, it's a very small factor. So a number of state agencies, including here in Oregon, have already decided that these workers are employees. In Alaska, in California, Pennsylvania, New York, in individual cases, in settlements, by other means. And I urge you to think about that as you consider amendment number 4. Finally,
and I hope you can conclude.
One more thing. Amendment number 2 is about setting up a wage board, which would be one way to address a number of the issues that drivers have brought to the media and brought to their representatives around the country. Fluctuating rates, the inability of drivers to pursue wage claims, discipline that's unexplained, not having access to their own data, and the terms of the loans that you might hear about later as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Hack.
Thank you, Chair. So for the sake of time, I have several questions, but I think the heart of this, and as a co-chief sponsor on the 3246, at the heart of this, I think it's a huge issue, and I appreciate the fact that you want to take care of the drivers, and we do too, but I think this is bigger than a TNC issue, the labor issues. So I guess my question would be, aside from the amendments, would you, since this is such a large issue and there are many questions related to the time that they work, the flexibility, the could they bargain, could they not bargain, how do we do this, would you be willing to forego those amendments and take the time to go into a work group and see what we could accomplish together to figure out what we could do that's best for everybody?
We're very interested. We'd have to know the particulars of the proposal, but to set up a task force and look at the entire gig economy is something we're very interested in.
So you would be willing to forego the amendments, let's slow down, figure out how we can come together,
forego
and
the
do
amendments,
what's best
stop
for
the bill, and take a fresh look at it? Is something, you know, depending on the... Yes, we'd be interested.
You'd be interested in work group. Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate it. Up next, I'm going to go with Chris Holmquist. Paul Marish and Joanne Duch. Did I not say that correctly? Joanne. Anybody named Joanne?
Joanne only going twice.
There's some overflow.
Oh.
Looks like she's coming.
Looks like Joanne. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and, before you give your testimony. Thanks.
My name is Christopher Holmquist. I've been a rideshare driver in and of electric cars since June of 2015. I drive 30 hours a week. I have over 5,000 rides, 30 hours a week. I'm born and raised in Portland, honestly. Doing this has given me the opportunity to be a tour guide and a representative of this state to tourists. It's something that I take very seriously. I like to think what I do brings money to this economy because I'm recommending businesses. It's an amazing opportunity to show people the state I know and love. I feel like I'm really contributing to society by doing this and keeping our neighbors safe from potential alcohol-related accidents. These taxis are here for only one reason today. That is to get rid of us so they don't have any competition, plain and simple. That's what these bills are supposed to do. I ask of that story of the woman in the beginning, was that taxi driver fingerprinted? Taxis have had many years to be better than us, and what did they do? Decades. Rely on an outdated business model. They got too comfortable. They have themselves to blame for this. You see, the difficulty of being in business in any industry is competition. You step up your game or you get out of the way. That's in any industry. And now because they're here, they're resorting to complaining. In closing, I ask that you ignore these guys. Saying no to these bills are saying no to innovation and its safety, and that's not the real Oregon I know. And by letting us go statewide, you're in return getting more people to shop at your local businesses because we know the economy here. I'm born and raised here, 100% born and raised, and I'm very proud of that. I'm going to leave my name in contact with her, so in case if you have any questions later, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Whoever wants to go next.
Good afternoon. My name is Paul Marish. I'm from Portland, Oregon. I share Representative Doherty's concerns about why the TNCs do not want a fingerprint check. They made a rather racist statement, and I'm surprised nobody's challenged them on that minorities are discriminated against. The company I work for probably has minimum 40 minorities there. And we used to, until 2 years ago, had to pass a city, state, federal background check. And then my driver's permit goes back to 1984. Every year I came back, and they would pull my background check all over again. They would pull my DMV report after I told them whether or not I'd had any tickets. If I had one ticket and they thought it was serious, I had to explain it. If I had two tickets, they could pull my license. Now, 3246, people can explain to you, it's stifling what the cities do. That ability, the fact that you have to answer every year, how did you get this ticket? And that if you get two tickets, your permit can be pulled. Why would you not want that that protection? I was a single parent. I put my kids in the cab to come home from school, to go to school, go to the doctor, wherever, the babysitter. I never had to worry. When I worked in Alaska, the chief of police did the background checks. He called up my friends. He said, how would you feel about your wife getting in the cab with him at 4 o'clock in the morning when he's drunk? I never thought of that. That's a damn good question. Why would you want to stifle that ability? Yes, things could be done. The idea of a statewide law to protect people's rights to earn $7 an hour, I have anecdotal evidence, anecdotal from a couple of different sources, that when you figure in vehicle depreciation, the time actually spent, the 60 TNCs you see waiting, lined up at the Moda Center for 2 hours, waiting for the rock concert or the basketball game to break because it's going on long, double parked. When you total all that up, that's the generous opportunity they have. So, and you're talking about companies, they got into Portland with an illegal secret meeting between a campaign consultant and two council members up at the West Hills one night. That's how they overcame the hurdle of getting past Portland's licensing laws. And then they changed it, and they threw it out, the background checks, and outsourced that from the Bureau. And they lost a $27 million lawsuit in California for collecting the money for background checks and not doing the background checks. So why would you do this, you know?
Thank you.
I'm sorry, there's too many things on the thing, but I also drive a wheelchair van. Their job, Kalachek or whatever his name is, he says he doesn't want to outcompete. He wants to put us out of business. When I'm put out of business driving the wheelchair van, and then the people, who's going to take them? The $7 fare or $8 fare a short trip downtown that I do, they might have to wait 20 minutes for me to come across to get them. Minimum charge is going to be $50. What's that going to do to the people on Social Security? All the people, see, they don't have to do wheelchairs in Portland anymore. They gave them a pass on ADA. If you're going to make a statewide law, make it statewide. They have to transport wheelchair people in wheelchairs at the median or going taxi cab rate.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony. It's helpful.
Good afternoon, Chair Holby, members of the committee. Joni Deutsch, Executive Director for the Northwest for TechNet, here today in support of House Bill 3246, and I will be speaking specifically to that bill. TechNet represents over 70 of the nation's leading companies in the fields of information technology, internet media, venture capital, and green tech. We are the national bipartisan network of technology companies that promotes the growth of the innovation economy. House Bill 3246 brings Oregon up to speed with 38 other states across the country that have created statewide laws that provide a consistent experience for drivers and passengers. Several more states are expected to adopt statewide ride-sharing laws this year. Passage of House Bill 3246 will ensure that Oregon does not find itself far behind the rest of the nation in offering this convenient and popular form of transportation to its residents. Ride-sharing services like Uber and Lyft allowed riders to get a ride at the push of a button on their mobile phones and allow Oregonians to earn extra money by giving other people rides using their personal vehicles. Today, only residents of the Portland metro area can choose ride-sharing to get from point A to point B. This legislation establishes fair and necessary regulations across the state and greatly expands reliable transportation for all Oregon communities. We encourage the committee to pass House Bill 3246 and bring the benefits of ride-sharing services to everyone in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony. I'm not seeing any questions. Thank you very much for your testimony today. Up next, let's have
Doug Moore, Mark Frohmeyer, and Chuck Bennett. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and try to keep it to 3 minutes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Chuck Bennett. I'm mayor of the city of Salem. I'm here on behalf of the city of Salem to express our support for House Bill 3246 as proposed for amendment. We have found that and are in the process of going through the process of developing our own ordinance, which will be a very, very similar to 3246. We think it does make sense to have one set of regulations statewide. I'm just going to cut this down real quickly, Mr. Chairman. This certainly would relieve us of having to go through passing our own ordinance. What we found here, Mr. Chairman, is that even without an ordinance in place, we have 10,000 residents of Salem who are registered Uber users and several hundred drivers who go to Portland to do their driving. We believe that, as you've heard from a whole variety of people, this is a system of the future and one that we are planning to take part in with or without this bill. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Please go.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, my name is Mark Frohnmeyer. I'm the founder and president of Arcimoto, an electric vehicle design and manufacturing company headquartered in Eugene. I'm here today in support of House Bill 3246 that would establish common statewide rules for transportation network companies operating in the state. There are a lot of good reasons to move forward with this bill. Today, I'm going to talk about just three. I started Arcimoto here in Oregon to help catalyze the shift to a sustainable transportation system of the future. We're pushing the edge of electric drive efficiency and affordability, and we aim to integrate autonomous vehicle technology over the next few years as we grow into a full manufacturing and transportation network company. As an entrepreneur in this space, the prospect of navigating this regulatory landscape absent consistent statewide rules is a real barrier to transportation innovation in Oregon. Like many other organizations that are part of the Southern Willamette Valley's technology sector, we often host visitors from vendors, partners, investors, and customers. The unavailability of effortless ride sharing in Eugene is often the very first experience arriving visitors notice, and it does not reflect positively on our push to be a cutting-edge technology hub. This explains in part why the Technology Association of Oregon's Southern Willamette Advisory Board, whose principals represent some of the most promising new ventures in our region, unanimously signed on in support of this bill. And finally, as a citizen, I want to be able to take a Lyft or an Uber when I need a ride. A couple weeks ago, my mom and I almost stranded ourselves at the airport. We were on the last flight in and had to persuade the sole remaining cab rider in the freezing rain to let us share the only remaining taxi into town. That anecdote represents a slight inconvenience. But on a more sobering note, just last year, two members of my immediate neighborhood community died in a drunk driving accident on their way home from a bar. During peak usage times, particularly closing times at bars, there just aren't enough cabs on the road in Eugene to respond to the demand in a reasonable time. And as a result, folks who shouldn't are tempted to drive themselves home, and the results can be truly tragic for themselves, for their families and loved ones, and anyone whose path they might cross. I urge your support of House Bill 3246. Thank you for your time.
Good afternoon, Chair Holvey, Vice Chairs Barreto and Bynum. For the record, my name is Paige Spence. You called my boss, Doug Moore, up, but he's in a meeting in the Speaker's office, so my apologies for the late shift. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon League of Conservation Voters. As you may know, OLCV leads the fight to protect the environment and the state legislature by coordinating a statewide coalition of groups that promote environmental protection in the legislature. And on behalf of the Oregon League of Conservation Voters and our supporters across the state, I ask you to support House Bill 3246. This bill would bring ride-sharing services to all Oregonians. The League believes that House Bill 3246 will be a helpful tool as the legislature contemplates a comprehensive transportation package this session. OLCV will support a transportation package that is multimodal and includes robust transit funding. We support this bill because ride-sharing is one of the many modern transportation options, along with biking, walking, and public transit, that enable Oregonians to live without personal vehicles. We hope that ride-sharing opens the doors to these alternative transportation methods that ultimately leads our state to have fewer cars on the road. Fewer cars on the road means less climate-changing pollution and healthier, more breathable air. In fact, research has shown that car-sharing services can reduce traffic congestion by up to 75%, and as a Portlander, that seems like a lot. We are also eager to work with the legislature on the forthcoming amendment that would create a per-trip surcharge to fund environmentally friendly transit options. The sustainability fee will increase our ability to invest in electric vehicle infrastructure, fund transit, and invest in other alternative transportation methods like biking and walking. Without dedicated funding, such as this bill authorizes, we're all seeing that it's proving very difficult to fund these other vital needs. So for these reasons, OLCV urges your support of House Bill 3246. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Kinnemer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mayor Bennett, I wanted to ask, have you and the council considered the adequate safety of the background checks that are in this bill?
We're in the process of going through the ordinance development now, Representative Kinnemer, and we have done a great deal of review of the background check. We believe this is more than adequate. We currently use our local police department to do background checks for local taxi companies. It's a long-standing relationship using a fingerprint system. What we don't have now is enough police officers to do the background checks on the hundreds of drivers that we would try to process under this program. And in taking a look at the Social Security number system, we're more than confident that this is probably a better system in looking at the criminal background records of any of the potential drivers. And we also sort of are looking at it as somehow this is working in hundreds, if not thousands, of other cities. We think it'll work in Salem, Oregon. We don't think we're atypical.
Representative Evans.
Thank you, Chair. I know this is exciting to a lot of people, automated stuff and all this other stuff, but I went to war many times with technology that was built by the lowest bidder. So I'm not as excited about technology as some others because I've seen when it goes wrong. So my questions about opening the door on this really go to, again, and I hate to ask a second question to the mayor, but I'm going to. Given the, at least what I'm told from the news, the practices that were going on in Portland by Uber, I think it was, to somehow defeat something or other as far as where people were paying attention to rides and things like that, how do we have confidence, or how do you have confidence enough that problem has been taken care of, and that Uber, for example, is going to be not hiding something else? I mean, that's the concern I have.
I certainly thank you, Representative, Mr. Chairman, Representative Evans. I can appreciate your question relative to one of the companies. I have not seen a full explanation of what went on there in terms of, as I recall, the term was grayballing. I did not understand it to have one thing to do with background checks. I listened, as you did today, to what I thought was a very compelling and disturbing story
right. In
your district. From a resident in your district that appeared to be involving a taxi cab driver. I don't think that's typical either. I think that from what I've seen and read and had testified to so far in front of our city council, I have just absolute confidence in this system as the correct way to go with background checks. I'm not at all uncomfortable with it. So. Now, whether the council is, we will find out over the next few weeks as we consider a change in our ordinance.
Thank you, Representative Doherty.
Okay, I have a question for Mayor Bennett. Has the city council looked at all with the TNCs to make sure that they are not necessarily independent contractors, but employees of the major companies for unemployment, for disability, and those sort of things, because I think that's one of the big issues, is that they're considered independent contractors, but the question is, other municipalities have said, no, they're not. And so have you had any discussion in Salem on this?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Doherty, we've had minimal discussion on this particular aspect of the TNCs. It's one of the things that's attractive about your bill with amendments is you resolve that question statewide. At this point, as far as I can tell, and again, we have not gone through a full public hearing process. We have gone through a process of endorsing this bill. But we have accepted that these are independent contractors at this point, as I can tell, because that's the ordinance we have in front of us. Frankly, seeing these amendments and hearing the discussion, I'll be discussing with councilors this concept in a little more detail as it comes forward. So I've appreciated the hearing, just listening to all of the discussion.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate your testimony today. I appreciate it. With that, I'd like to call up next Dan Salzman, Craig Honeyman, and Catherine Stevens. Good afternoon. If you'd identify yourself for the record, please, and give us your testimony, hopefully trying to stick to that 3 minutes. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Holvey and members of the committee. I am Portland City Commissioner Dan Salzman, and I'm also the commissioner in charge of our Transportation Bureau, which oversees our private-for-hire transportation regulatory programs. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on an array of vehicle-for-hire legislation. The City of Portland has a robust and hard-fought regulatory system in place for both taxis and transportation network companies. As such, we oppose House Bill 3157 and House Bill 3246. In a city growing as rapidly as Portland, the sheer volume of drivers and passengers requires that the city play a critical role in monitoring service levels and ensuring that rides are safe, and if they aren't, that companies are held accountable for that. I want to focus more specifically on House Bill 3246, which would require the state to regulate transportation network companies, taking all authority out of the hands and putting in place a hastily crafted and lax oversight system, taking all authority out of the hands of local governments. And we believe that is really an approach that is really disconnected from what's really happening on the ground in our local communities. The City of Portland has had a particularly contentious relationship with transportation network companies in the past. By way of background, in 2014, Uber entered the Portland market illegally and continued to operate against the wishes of the City of Portland. And Uber actively evaded regulators that are entrusted with the responsibility of making sure that the public is safe. The city had to take legal action to stop Uber from unlawfully operating in Portland. We later did establish a regulatory framework with the goal of leveling the field between taxis and TNCs, but most importantly, ensuring the safety of our public. Over the past 3 years, the city has worked diligently to craft a comprehensive regulatory framework that allows us to monitor and audit the private-for-hire vehicles in our jurisdiction. We are currently undertaking investigations into the potential grayballing of our enforcement personnel, which we, as was recently reported in the New York Times, did occur in the period before we actually had our regulations in place in 2014. But grayballing is, in essence, a system that is specifically designed to use technology to deceive and evade local government regulators. In light of this difficult history and recent revelations, now is not the time to loosen the regulatory reins. Local governments must continue to have the oversight and enforcement ability the public expects in order to ensure their safety, improve accessibility, craft equitable policies, and respond to public concerns more nimbly. We strongly encourage the legislature to take a careful look at these policies and their impacts before moving forward. So thank you for your time today, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Chair Holby, members of the committee, Mike, good afternoon. My name is Craig Honeyman, and I appear before you today on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities and its 241 members in opposition to House Bills 3157 and House Bill 3246. As I'm sure the committee knows, Oregon is a home rule state. That means that any authority not specifically and expressly denied by another government entity belongs to cities. Both of these bills preempt this local authority. The League opposes, as a matter of policy, legislative attempts to deny local control, especially in instances such as this, where regulatory authority has traditionally resided with a local government. The League is fully aware of the positive impact that a sharing economy is having on local citizens, and we generally support the development of new and innovative ways of providing services to the public, but not at the expense of having a say in matters relating to public safety and health, and yes, even receiving fair and equitable compensation for the regulatory activity that accompanies this kind of business activity. Let me point out that House Bill 3157 goes beyond just denying cities the right to regulate transportation network companies. It puts the Oregon Department of Transportation in the role of regulating all vehicle-for-hire companies, including those providing taxicab and limousine services, an authority traditionally reserved for cities. So to conclude, the League does not oppose the creation of a new ride-sharing business models such as those used by transportation network companies, but we do strongly oppose the premises that they not be included in the local regulatory structure that already applies to providers of vehicle-for-hire services, such as House Bill 3246, or all such services that be state-regulated, such as House Bill 3157. I appreciate the opportunity to justify.
Chair Holvey and members of the committee, thank you very much for your time today. I'm Catherine Stevens. I'm the Assistant Airport Director at the Eugene Airport. I'm here representing the City of Eugene and the Eugene Airport in opposition of House Bill 3246 as written. My comments can also extend to other bills that would take away any local control for commercial service airports in Oregon. While House Bill 3246 does not preempt or repeal the city or the airport's ability to regulate taxi cabs or vehicles for hire, it does preempt the ability of the city and the airport to regulate transportation network companies. The Eugene Airport is owned and operated by the City of Eugene. As the second largest commercial service airport in Oregon, EUG serves nearly 1 million passengers a year. Managing vehicle ingress and egress on airport property is of significant importance. EUG currently regulates taxicab operation on airport property via an annual permit, an ingress lane designated for ground transportation pickup only, and a trip fee generated by an automatic vehicle identification system. The same operating option has been made available to TNCs. There is significant impact to commercial service airports in this bill as written. The Eugene Airport has rules and regulations in place that ensure safety and security on the front curbs of our terminal building. The Department of Homeland Security requires EUG and other commercial service airports in the state to maintain certain security standards. Regulation of taxi cabs and TNC operations at EUG provides means to stay in compliance with this DHS regulation. In addition to the security concerns, EUG would lose significant revenue under House Bill 3246. Annual ground transportation permit fees amount to about $6,000 in revenue, but more significantly, in 2016, taxicab trip fees brought in nearly $32,000 in revenue. With permitting for TNCs now available in the City of Eugene and at the Eugene Airport, there is additional potential for lost revenue if the airport is not able to regulate TNCs. In addition, once TNCs
agencies start operating in Eugene again, a shift away from taxicab use to TNC use may occur, resulting in even less revenue generated at the airport under the current proposed legislation. House Bill 3246, as written, will negatively impact all commercial service airports in Oregon. We hope you'll support Oregon airports in maintaining local control in this area. Thank you.
Thank you. Any quick questions for this panel? Thank you very much for your testimony today. Up next, I'd like to get Darren Campbell back up with perhaps Ian Strapini and Tom Alberto. I know, Craig, you've already had one bite, but I knew you didn't speak to another bill that you wanted to, so a lot of people from the radio cab and can't get to all of them. Right.
No problem. My brother is Craig.
Oh.
Just for the record.
Darren, excuse me. Yeah, you all guys all mixed together. So.
Good afternoon. My name is Ian Strapini. I'm here supporting House Bill 3157. I've been an owner of Radio Cab for the last 9 years. I'd like to share how TNC has affected me and what I think an appropriate and fair direction I'm hoping Oregon will take, one that gives all of us in this transportation industry a legitimate chance on an equal playing field. This job has provided me with a moderate middle-class income for many years prior to the introduction of transportation network companies. Over the last several years, I've seen my income drop 30 to 40%. I've had been saving for a down payment on a house for a long time, and unfortunately, I've watched as my income and savings have slowly vanished, as well Portland housing prices have soared, preventing me from achieving the most basic dream of many Oregonians, home ownership. I believe the technological innovation and capitalism are the bedrock of the American economy and provide new and wonderful ways for people to make money and move the bar of progress forward. I think what Uber and Lyft have done is great for many people, drivers and passengers alike. I think the taxi industry needed a good shakeup to keep us competitive and held to higher standards here in the 21st century. I'm all for competition when the competition is fair on both sides. The freedom of these companies has truly given birth to a runaway $60 billion technological behemoth whose sole ambition is to destroy the legitimate, law-abiding, insured, and regulated existing taxi industry and thus create a true monopoly of the transportation industry. I would ask that you please consider adding the most basic of regulations upon the TNCs operating in this wonderful state. Two quick points I'd like to mention in regards to the TNC that come up frequently. One thing that's discussed many times in my cab is in regards to where the money goes. When someone in Portland takes an Uber, they don't know, and many times users don't care where their money is going. In all cases, up to 30% of the fare is immediately given to California and the cut that Uber takes. And the rest many times go to a driver who lives across the border in Vancouver or who knows where, as we see many license plates from states extremely far away. Providing the car never gases up in Oregon, the state does not receive any funds for the use of the roads. I live in Portland and like to tell passengers that 100% of the money you give to me stays right here in the state. In regards to the roads, when Uber makes the claim that they are helping remove cars from the road, that is truly a specious argument. Recent studies done in San Francisco has proven that TNCs have added traffic congestion, and I'm sure that's been a contributing factor in the gridlock we're seeing in the Portland area over the last several years. If you release the floodgates, I'm sure that you will begin to see the traffic effect in other cities in a short time here. I would please ask that you consider a progressive way forward that transportation companies in the state are given a chance to serve the people in this new digital economy. The role of Silicon Valley is to innovate and try new forms of business, and there's nothing wrong with that, but we need to go about it in a conscientious and well-planned out way. The role of government is to provide balanced rules that protect all of its citizens. I know the state can take a stand for how it believes we want people to be treated in a fair, humane, and equitable manner. Thank you for your time and consideration, and I hope you'll support House Bill 3157.
Thank you. Whoever wants to go first.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, once again, Darren Campbell, lobbyist for Radio Cab. There's been a lot said today, and I wanted to give just a brief history on what Radio Cab's brought to this committee today. Originally, we were looking for a few patchwork issues, working with Representative Stark on a serious issue that needs to be addressed immediately, in our opinion. And then I read an article that Representative Clem was bringing the TNC 3246 to fruition. I went to his office to find out if I could be a part of that conversation and was told no. So I went to Representative Doherty's office, and we brought up 3157. Now, 3157 is not intended to override
local jurisdictions. It's intended to create a platform that ODOT can start bringing stakeholders together and create a regulatory framework, statewide regulatory framework that could work with local jurisdictions and create something that would work for all private for hire members of the industry. Taxi drivers, Uber, Lyft, limo services, shuttle services. So, Mr. Chair, if I could direct a response to Representative Hack, basically 3157 does bring together a group of shareholders to create this regulatory framework, to your question to the representative from Lyft. At least that was the legislative intent behind the request of the bill. And it's a starting off point for us. As far as the other three bills, I would love to see those just integrated into 3157 and help help that continue down rather than having a patchwork group of bills. Any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Thomas Alberti. I'm from Eugene, Oregon. I'd like to thank you guys for the opportunity to be able to partake in our democratic process. First of all, I'd like to comment on how quiet it is in here and the overflow. It's really hard to hear the testimony. I hope we can get a hold of a written transcript of previous testimony, because it was hard to hear over the flush of the toilets.
You
back
can,
there.
But your clock is ticking as far as your testimony.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, I'll be quick. I just wanted to bring up a few quick points. So one thing, one of the, I think it was... I lost his name. I think Bryce Bennett had talked about being able to turn the insurance only counting when it's app on and no insurance when it's app off. I'd like for there to be a level playing field in which we could as a cab driver, you know, I can't only pay insurance when the meter's on and not pay insurance when the meter's off. The insurance company's not going to go for that. And I'd like there to be a level playing field. And if the competition doesn't have to pay insurance when they don't have a rider in their car, that's giving them that's picking winners. Also, you know, I'd like to reiterate what the gentleman to my right said. When Uber collects fares, 20 to 30% of the fare goes to corporate headquarters, leaves the state forever. Money that's raised by cab companies and local cab companies stays local, 100% of it. And so that money counts, every dollar counts as $14 to $21, I believe a study has shown. And we can't afford to lose that money. It's much better for the economy if that money stays local. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony. I'd like to get a couple more people to testify, and we'll get an opportunity for questions perhaps in the future. But I would like to get Charles McGee.
I had a question for Darren.
We'll get to him.
Okay. Thank you.
Charles McGee is not here.
I think he left.
Kelly House. And you're probably going to be the last one to testify, so.
Just me? I have friends, they can come up.
Yeah, I don't have time. You did. Okay. Introduce yourself for the record, please.
Hi, my name is Kelly House. I drive for Uber and Lyft. I am a veteran of the U.S. military, Army and Navy, husband, father. I live in Washington, but I do drive mostly in Portland. Most of my driving is done in Oregon State. I pay taxes into Oregon. I've been driving in the TNC industry for about 2 years. I started driving for Uber and Lyft back in 2015.
so that I could spend more time with my family. At that time, my daughter was spending a lot more time in daycare than I was happy with, so we made a drastic change in our lifestyle, which included me giving up my career to do this for a living. I'm happy with it. I love what I do. I do believe that it's wrong for this bill to pass, 3246, because it gives far too much of the control to Uber and Lyft, takes my voice completely out of the equation. Let's see. Back in February of last year, 2016, both the companies, once they were given free rein to operate within the city of Portland, once their pilot program was okayed, they decided that it was okay to drop their rates in what was supposed to have been a temporary price reduction, but it's never gone back up. That has affected a lot of the drivers in Uber and Lyft to have to drive more hours to make the same amount of money. I'm fortunate I don't have to do that because, you know, my circumstances don't require it. But if I did, I would have to drive 33% more hours to meet that 25% reduction in rate. That creates a unsafe driving condition for Uber and Lyft drivers. People are tired when they drive more. You have to work more, you're obviously going to get more tired. We would like some of the control to be given back to the drivers. I mean, that's another story altogether. Sorry. This bill would give all of the power to a corporation that are not concerned with the people that are working for them in the field, giving that power to dictate the rates, rules, and regulations surrounding the TNC industry. Taxis were regulated to offer some of the protection to the men and women who drive them and the passengers as well. I believe that this bill should be voted down and have something written in its place to offer the same protection to the TNC drivers and passengers. So, thank you for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony.
One quick question. I've got a question of him.
Darren and Kelly House, can you both come back for a second?
Well, no, actually, I have a question about paychecks.
All right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Come on back up. Representative Hack had a quick question. We've got about three minutes left, and I have a couple of announcements I need to make. So,
thank you, Chair. As it relates to the cab issue, I'm just curious. My understanding is there was a 2016 audit report done from the City of Portland, and that three new cab companies have opened since Uber came. Is that true? And if that is the case, could that possibly be a part of some of what's going on with the issues with the cabs? I don't know. I'm just asking the question.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair, Representative Hack. So, yes, during the process time of the task force that were put in place to deal with the TNC implementation process, during that time, Commissioner Novick granted approval for, I believe, about 200 new taxi permits amongst three different companies. Since then, one of those companies has gone out of business, EcoCab. The other three, I do not believe, have actually fulfilled all the numbers of permits to put on the road. And you compare that to the estimated 10 to 12,000 Uber and Lyft cars that are on the road in the Portland metropolitan market, it doesn't even touch us. Not only that.
Thank you. Okay. Representative Doherty, your question
actually,
real quick.
I have a question about paychecks. And I don't know, if you drive for Uber or Lyft, do you get your paycheck from them? Or how does that work?
It's all direct deposit, ma'am.
Okay, so it's direct deposit for you into an Uber account? Or
negative. I mean, it goes straight into your bank account, ma'am.
Okay. Your personal bank account.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony and your answer to the question. So with that, committee members, I am going to close the public hearing on, now let's go, House Bill 3043, House Bill 3045, House Bill 3093, House Bill 3157, and House Bill 3246. It is my intent to carry these bills over to Wednesday on our 5:30 agenda. We'll have one bill up before we reconvene our discussion on Uber and Lyft and TNCs in general. That'll be Wednesday evening, sometime after 5:30. So everything else is done, carried over all these bills?
Yep, and we work.
Thank you for getting our work session.
All right, with that, I'm going to adjourn the House Committee on Business and Labor. The House Committee on Business and Labor.
Turn.